thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Welcome, dear listeners, to New Dimensions Radio. Today, we explore the Enneagram, an ancient system that serves as a unique framework for understanding ourselves, including our core motivations, fears, desires, strengths, and challenges, as well as fostering empathy for others in their journey. Joining us is Russ Hudson, a world-renowned teacher, author, and scholar, who has dedicated over 30 years to studying and sharing the gifts of the Enneagram. He's the author of The Wisdom of the Enneagram and Nine Gateways to Presence. Join us for the next hour as we delve into the transformative power of the Enneagram with one of its most respected and influential teachers. We'll explore how this ancient system can unlock deep self-awareness, foster inner growth, and ultimately help us live more authentic, fulfilling lives. I'm your host, Travis Glenn Sabera. Welcome to New Dimensions, and a warm welcome to you, Russ.
Thank you, Travis Glenn. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to getting into the nuance of the Enneagram, but I'm wondering if we can start today with a little bit of your personal history. Maybe who you were a little bit before you discovered the Enneagram and what you thought your life was going to be before it took off in this way.
Yeah. Well, you know, so many of the main things that impact our lives tend to not be planned. That was certainly the case with me. As a young person, I was interested in science. So I thought I might go into medicine or medical research. But I also love music and art, and I started making a living as a musician, as a guitar player.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was in bands and stuff here in New York City and back in the day, and studied acting a bit. But I always had that kind of pull between the sort of art, more arts and humanities side of things, and the more scientific. So I wasn't sure how that was all going to work out. But I got the bug, like a lot of people did back in the 1970s, of the spiritual journey, the journey of awakening, right? And I went and checked out a lot of gurus and a lot of teachings and read a lot of books. There were many new things coming out back then. But I got really fascinated by George Gurdjieff, who some of you may have heard of. Yeah, he was a teacher, and he was talking about awakening and that humanity was asleep and that you could understand why people do such crazy things if you see that we're kind of asleep to our real nature. So I was intrigued by that. And through a series of coincidences, actually, I came upon the Gurdjieff work. And that's where I learned about the Enneagram and started doing it. But I didn't think of doing it as a living. For many years, I was just, you know, a student. I was practicing. I was doing my meditations. I was going to retreats and so forth. But it wasn't until much later when I met Don Richard Riso at the very end of the 80s that I started to consider, oh, I actually could do this for a living.
Yeah, that this could be it. And I'm wondering about that moment that you thought maybe about letting go of music and finding, well, this actually is what I'm going into. And I think you had a mentor make a comment to something to inspire you this way.
Yes, I sure did. Well, as a guitar player, I was always wanting to learn from the masters, from the great guitar players. And I got the opportunity to meet Robert Fripp, who some of you may know. He was the main guiding force in King Crimson. He
Absolutely.
Played with the Talking Heads. He played with Blondie. He played with David Bowie. On
the whole CBGB's crowd.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always tell people, you know, that great guitar part in the song Heroes by David Bowie, that's Robert Fripp. Anyway, Robert Fripp was in the work. He was He'd been studying under John Bennett, who was had been a student and disciple of Gurdjieff. And so he was really into the work, and he kind of pointed me in that direction. And years later, I was studying guitar. We respected him as a person, but also I was left-handed and play right-handed, and so was he. So I thought it would be a good match. But after some time of getting to know him and playing, he suggested to me that while I was a good guitar player, that there are many, many, many good guitar players out there, but that I had an ability to communicate about the work to the other young men and women who were studying with him. And he said, you know, there aren't many people who can do that. So you might consider that that is your real calling. I wasn't very happy to hear it, but as a rejection of my music, you know, but he kept reassuring me it wasn't that. And by golly, he was right, you know.
He saw something in you. He saw something, both strands of your gifts. He said, you got this and go this way.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic to be seen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you were first hearing about this, I'm wondering what it means. You've used the word the work. And so I'm wondering if you could flesh that out a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, I think these days a lot of people use that terminology. I know Byron Katie uses that to describe what she does, for example. But traditionally, it was what we called the practices of presence, self-remembering, mindfulness, awareness that we learned in the Gurdjieff. It's called the Gurdjieff work, and the work for short. So it was, you know, that background. You know, when I first learned the Enneagram, I didn't learn it the way a lot of people do. For me, it was not initially a system of type. I learned about it as a symbol representing the way human consciousness operates and as part of a whole collection of practices which were designed to help us be more present and awake in our life. And for me, that's always what the Enneagram is really about.
Exactly. I think this is such an important understanding that it's not just a system of knowledge to keep spinning inside of our head, but how can we bring it into our bodies and into the world? And part of the beauty of the Enneagram is it does give us the 9 different gateways of what our avenue or path to that presence might be. So I'm wondering if you can get a little more specific in a very quick sense about something that might spark something so our listeners might say, oh, that might be my type.
Oh, all right. So the 9 points. Well, got to have a little tip of the hat to Oscar Chazo and Claudio Naranjo and Don Riso and all the people who I've learned from. But basically, each of the 9 points, I call them points, has a gift. It's one of the gifts of human existence, human consciousness. And it's also got a kind of problem we get into, a challenge when we overdo it, when we get lost in that perspective. So just going around, I usually start with 8 because the 8, 9, and 1 sit at the top of the circle. If you see the Enneagram symbol, it's like a circle with these lines in it. And they represent the principle of groundedness, embodiment, that you can't really be present if you're not in your body. So 8 is about aliveness, energy, confidence, empowerment, strength, being fully on, really here, dynamically here. And so that's a really important ingredient of being a person, but you can overdo it in a way that trying to make things happen actually takes you out of presence, takes you out of the moment, shuts down your sensitivity, kind of hardens us when we overdo it.
And they get accused of being angry.
Angry and bossy.
Rebellious.
And stuff like that, you know, which just means that you've lost the core of what your 8-ness is. right? Mm. And when we are lost, we tend to turn to ego things that kind of look like the real thing, but create more problems than they help. So nine is the next one. Nine is, again, having to do with embodiment. It has to do with being grounded, landed, at home in yourself, at peace in yourself, settled. And when we're more grounded and settled in our body, that's when we really connect with the universe, with life, with nature, with everything. It's weird. We try to get out of ourselves to connect to the world, but actually it's when we come into ourselves that the connection is already there waiting for us.
I can feel that connection emerge as you speak about it.
Yeah, it's very magical. And so nines in their power are the master of that. They know how to invite everyone home, have us all come home to ourselves, land in ourselves in a way that's simple and unassuming. Now, all the types can be creative and can be brilliant, but we're talking about more tendencies or gifts that aren't necessarily about talents exactly. So when nines overdo it, they want to be at peace and chilled out and no problemo, but they do it by detaching, by dissociating, by going into their own little world. And so don't we all. You know, right. When we're feeling stressed, we just go into our imagination, we go into our inner world and kind of disconnect. And we still smile and nod and say namaste and all that, but Elvis has left the building.
And you know, it's nice, sitting on the sofa with the bag of chips, watching TV.
Whatever, or just going through your job and autopilot, or saying I love you just because someone expects you to say it.
Okay. Good example, right? And this takes us into the one in this same group configuration.
Yes, the one. This is what you learn a lot about in yoga, for example. When we're more present, we're more aligned. The different parts of ourselves are more naturally integrated and we feel alignment, and it restores a sense of human dignity. It restores a sense of the sacredness of life. It restores the sense that there is a higher purpose to my existence and I can tune into that. And again, happens amazingly through the body. So ones are the masters of that, through the masters of inspiration, of reminding us that we have higher callings, that we're not here to just fool around and waste away our time on the planet.
Krishnamurti, I think, is a good example of a one. Is that correct?
Yeah. He probably was that. He was, he had both sides of it, you know, from time to time. But when he was on, oh man, he was on. I used to go sit and listen to him back in the days where he was giving his talks. But ones just believe there is a right and sensible, intelligent way for us humans to live. And by golly, I'm going to find it and I'm going to do that. The problem is when we're not present, and this is true for all nine of them, when we're not present, ego structures take over and try to do the same thing, but they can't really produce it. So instead of that kind of dignity and sacredness and sense of goodness, you get a strictness. Like, I can't mess around. I got to be strict. I got to not make mistakes. I've got to be correct. And I'm really under the gun of my own inner critic, or my superego, as Freud would call it.
Right. So like that's Angela not, in The Office.
Yes. And that's not going to get us where we want to go, although it seems to. But then we end up going round and round in a kind of rut in ourselves. And that's what we don't want.
I'm speaking with Russ Hudson, author of Nine Gateways to Presence. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to russhudson.com, RussHudson.com, or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. guest today is Russ Hudson, and we're speaking about the 9 gateways to presence of the Enneagram. We've just been done speaking with the body cluster of the 8, 9, and 1, and I assume we'll move right into the 2, 3, and 4.
That would be the logical thing, right? And they're about the heart. They're about the heart. And in each of these distinctions, the Enneagram is helping us see the difference between that intelligence in presence and that intelligence in autopilot, or when we're coming more out of egotistical patterns, right? So heart is a great example. There's a deeper heart, which is the heart spoken of in our religious, it's the heart of compassion and kindness and patience and courage and some of the most beautiful things about human life. But when we're not so present, that's not necessarily where we're hanging out. We're hanging out in our reactivity. When we're not present in the heart goes into reaction. It's kind of freaking out about the fact that no one's home. And so then everything pushes our buttons, you know, and that's how we go through life.
This is reminding me of a quote of a previous guest, Joseph Campbell, that we had. He said, one of the problems today is that we're not well acquainted with the literature of the spirit.
Yes.
And so that where we go towards our orientation in the world determines, I suppose, the quality and capacity of our heart function.
Very much so. And, you know, I think people intuitively understand that the heart is central in the whole process of spiritual transformation. And the Enneagram teachings would concur, although, as I'm fond of saying, the heart does best with its good buddies, the mind and the body. So
all three are inseparable. Absolutely.
Right. We're not here to be a third of a person. We need all of it. So in the heart center, you've got the 2. And that's the part of the heart that goes out, that connects, that seeks connection, that intuitively moves toward kindness and holding, and the kind of heart that can listen when somebody's in a tough way. And it's the kind of heart that's trying to bring what's needed to the situation. So 2s just very naturally are empathetic. They're very kind. They're very loving people, and connection is everything to them. That's the most important thing. However, as we've seen, without presence, the heart connection becomes the effort to connect, trying to hold on to connections. And then we get into possessiveness, jealousy, all kind of heartbreaking situations, codependency, you name it. And I hope at this point, everybody can kind of tell that you don't have to be a 2 to have that be a part of your journey. You know, it's your main journey may be something else, but some part of all of this is going to be showing up. And sheesh, it's pretty hard to find someone who has not been impacted by the ins and outs of what 2 brings us, you see.
I hear parts of myself so far and what everything you've talked about, no matter what the number is. And I also keep trying to bring to our listeners an example, either in literature or film or TV or even real life. So who might we think of if we think of a 2 that we might know at large?
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of times in movies they like to show the pathological 2 because they're kind of scary. It's the person who's pretending to be loving and nice, but they actually have a lot of rage. And so, you know, that you've got that on the other side. But there, I think, some great performers. Dolly Parton knows the Enneagram, and she self-types as a 2. And who else would write the song, "I Will Always Love You"?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the transmission and the truth of that resonates.
Oh, yeah. That song touched a lot of people. And you just look at her life. She always very outgoing and connecting. And
I think it is a higher aspect of the 2, because the song is also about a breakup. It's about I'm leaving and moving on, and I will always love you. It's not the codependency of like we have to be enmeshed to know that I love you and to prove it. No, she's like, I love you no matter what form our relationship is. And that is the higher aspect of this principle, I think.
Exactly. And that's why I picked her as an example, because I think that's, again, it's what we're aspiring to. We're all seeking to find out how we get home to these real beautiful parts of being a human being.
Lovely. And let's move on. What are the gifts and the qualities of the three?
Three is, to put it in a more metaphysical sense, you know, there is the kind of spiritual realization that you are consciousness, that you are presence, right? Like, wow, I'm not just this idea in my head. I am this quality of awareness, right? And point three comes in and says, yes, and that awareness is living as this particular human being. And the particular human being counts, matters. Otherwise, you got spiritual bypass. So this is, three is about, wow, here I am with these capacities I've been granted, talents that I have, abilities. How best do I serve this world? What is my calling in life? What am I here to do? And so then the three is showing all of us about how we develop ourselves as human beings so that we can be of service, so we can offer something important and necessary for the world.
The higher aspiration of a calling versus mere ambition and achievement.
That's right. And threes get knocked a lot, I think, because this culture is so built for a long time on personality three values. Because when we're not present, we can't find that calling. So we're looking to the world, we're looking to our family, we're looking to our culture to tell us, who is the winner here? Who are the successful people? Who are the stars? And I want to be like that. And then threes will put a lot of work and effort into driving themselves to become who they think they're supposed to be, which is very different than discovering who I am and letting that shine. You know, that's the distinction.
Would you say this is indicative of the gestalt of Los Angeles in general?
Oh, yes.
Is that fair to say?
Okay. Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. Good old L.A. is a very three place. Well, it's because of the movie industry there and the entertainment media. So everyone is aware of image, right? And image is a big part of the three. It's not, you know, human beings play roles. We play roles with different people, which is necessary. When you're talking with a two-year-old niece, you're going to talk differently than you would to the director of the board of your company. And when we're present, we're aware of playing roles, but we don't lose ourselves. When we're not present, we disappear into the roles that life asks of us. And that happens to everybody, but that's a real vulnerability for point three.
Yeah. How tender to look at it that way.
Yeah.
And let's round out the heart triad and move into four.
Sure. Four is about the depth of the heart, and that in the deeper heart, we discover who and what we are, like our true nature, what we are beyond all of our self-concepts, beyond all of our stories and narratives about ourselves. It's like an immediate in-presence encounter with the mystery of what we are as consciousness. But we know this in the heart, in this very deep place. And so that's very beautiful. And it's also when we are being more ourselves, we're expressing something deeper about the human journey and about what it is to be a human being, what it is to love and what it is to lose, and so on and so forth. There's a kind of tender holding of the vicissitudes of a human life. Now, when we're not so present, we're trying to become ourselves through chronically individuating, by trying to be different, by trying to keep showing how we're not like other people, and kind of subtly judging everybody as not being as deep or interesting or as profound as I am, you know?
And this is what you mean by chronically individuating.
Yes. And okay. Then, you know, I'm not like these people. There's a lot of, also because when we're not present, we can't go to the deeper heart. So there's a kind of idealization of my emotional responses and reactions like that. I'm correctly realizing in that direction, I'm going to find what I'm looking for. So fours are right about that. But without presence, I can't go deep enough. So I'm sort of caught in this kind of stormy level. And then I start to want to kind of keep it that way because I sense that feels more authentic. It feels more real, feels more honest. And I want to be that person. But it never satisfies because it doesn't go quite deep enough. But a lot, it's one of the most popular mistypes. Because, and again, you know, if you say, well, these are people who love beauty and are into depth and they, you know, well, sure. Who doesn't want to see themselves that way, you know? But the difficulties are really where you can distinguish more easily where you need to do your work.
When I feel into it, I wonder if one of my ideas that one of my favorite musicians, Prince, might be in this area.
And certainly
his journey from the low to the highest aspects of this has been something I was watching my whole life.
No, Prince is a good example. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, I think I'm this certain kind of four and everything. I said, really? You're like Prince.
Okay.
They're in your accounting office. Now, you might have a part right. of that in you. I'm not debating that, but it might not be the main thing. Another good example of a musician that's kind of parallel with what we said about Dolly Parton is Joni Mitchell, who I think is a four. And, yeah. But she, one of her great songs, actually Prince's favorite song, is her song, A Case of You.
Yeah.
And it's another one. It's a parallel with the song of Dolly Parton that we saw the two. It's where she knows this relationship is going to really hurt. It's going to be difficult. I'm going to get my heart broken, but it's where I want to go. So I'm going, you know, if you really study the lyrics of that song, it's a great study of that. The four's willingness to go where their heart bids them, even though they know pain will be part of it.
Yeah. Do types find each other? Do they keep each other in their orbit? Do they keep each other either stuck or do they help each other blossom when they convene as types?
I think it really depends on how present they are. But I think definitely it's true that types find each other.
Okay.
And there's that kind of recognition like, oh, I get this person.
Sometimes we're suffering in the same way.
Yes. Sometimes it's a recognition where somebody's deeper in the stuff that you've actually got yourself out of. And you're, oh dear, I don't know if I want to see that. I don't know if I want to. So there can be a reaction to it too. But I think when people are on the journey of discovering the beautiful parts of all of these, they tend to be a help to others because they know what it's like to walk that particular road, you know.
I'm speaking with Russ Hudson, author of 9 Gateways to Presence. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to RussHudson.com, RussHudson.com, or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm speaking with Russ Hudson.